Hey A1 fans, Andy here. We're going to Cisco Live and we can't wait to see you there. If we see you wearing an A1 or Cables to Cloud shirt at Cisco Live, we'll enter you in our giveaway that includes a bunch of cool prizes like an A1 branded Yeti cup and an OCG of your choice from our friends at Cisco Press. Don't have a shirt? No problem. Head to the link in our bio and grab yours today. See you soon.
This is the Art of Network Engineering podcast. In this podcast, we'll explore tools, technologies, and talented people. We aim to bring you information that will expand your skill sets and toolbox and share the stories of fellow network engineers.
Welcome to the Art of Network Engineering. I am Tim Bertino, and I am the sole member of the A1 crew on this episode, not because nobody else wanted to hang out with me, I think, but no, actually because we have a very special panel episode tonight. I am not alone. I am joined by three other wonderful people who happen to be CCIEs. We're going to have a little bit of a Cisco Certified Internet Work Expert panel episode. We're really going to dive into why these folks decided to go toward the CCIE, what it means to them, how do they prep for it, and all different kinds of other questions I'm going to throw at them. So let's jump right into it. I have Erica Cooper, Tim McConaughey, and the cloud engineer from Down Under, Chris Miles. So let's start this off by getting an introduction on each of you. Maybe tell me where your career's at today, what CCIE or CCIEs that you have, and why you got them. So Erica, let's start it with you. How are you? Thanks for joining.
Ah, thank you for having me. I've always wanted to be on the show, so I'm a huge fan. So now I'm actually here. So I'm thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it. So for everyone that's out there, my name is Erica Cooper. I am a senior technical leader for Cisco, and I deal a lot with data center, cloud security, and also enterprise SD-WAN. I was kind of coming up to speed on SD-WAN, so being forced to do that. Kind of going over to the dark side a little bit. So my background is data center. I've got my data center CCIE, and I took it, back in 2014. So my background is I started out route switch and then moved over into, enterprise route switch, and then moved over into the data center world. So that's pretty much my background.
Oh, that's interesting. And I could be way off base, but it seems, is that typical for people to go after something that wasn't, back when they had, route switch and security and enterprise, or not enterprise, they have enterprise now, but data center, is it typical for people to do one other than route switch or what's enterprise now first? Because I know people get multiple, but just curious on that.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I started out, there was only, I think, three tracks. It was service provider, route switch, and I think the SNA something other. Denise Fishburne has it, and it's obsolete right now. But I think it's it's like the WAN version, but it's a long, long time ago. So I started out with route switch. It took me about three times. I failed it, failed the exam, and then on the fourth time, I said, okay, Cisco is notorious for, changing up the version. So we went from like version 2 to version 3, and I bought up all this equipment off of eBay, and I was like, hey, I'm going to match my equipment with the Internet Working Expert INE lab topologies. And then Cisco went from version 4 to 5, and I was like, I'm not buying nothing else. And so my husband was like, well, you got all this equipment sitting in here, what do you want to do? And so I kind of stewed and pouted a little bit, just being transparent, and I said, I'm not giving up. And so he said, well, look for another track. And I could not stand collaboration. I was like, and no shade to the collaboration folks. Hey, I love them. You got to have a phone. But I just was like, I'm not doing that. I'm definitely not doing service provider. I'm done with route switch. What else? And they had just come up with the security track, which I was thinking about. But then also, I looked at the data center, and the data center was so intriguing for me. I thought it would, pretty much align with my VMware experience and background. And so I said, I'm going to go for that. And so I, set out for my studying and everything else. And then we went for the exam. So it was challenging, you know, but a lot of my skill set and studying for my enterprise or route switch was able to transfer over. So I didn't have to really start over from scratch, which is good. So.
Oh, that's very good. Nice. And kind of stepping it back to further back, what was the original motivation for you to go after the CCIE in the first place?
Well, another transparent moment. So I got kind of fed up with, I hate to say it like this, you know, it sounds very callous, but when you get your CCNA and you get your CCNP, you have to figure out how you're going to differentiate yourself with your everyone else around you. And so just being brutally honest with you, some people had their CCNA, had their CCNP, and they could not just configure anything. You know, they couldn't even, you know, add a VLAN without taking down circuits, you know, stuff like that. So I wanted to differentiate myself. And the best thing for me at that time was getting my CCIE. And then I ran across Denise Fishburne. Or I think in the IT world, she's known as Fish. I always call her Denise Fishburne. But, you know, Denise, and then there was another young lady. Her name was Pat Finger. They both were women in IT. And when I saw Denise's blog, was the Networking with Fish, I was just like floored. I was like, oh, my God, there's a woman out here. And you know, so I just started figuring out what I needed to do to accomplish that. And it wasn't really like a straight path, but it was the end goal was always to get my CCIE. So
no, that's excellent. I love the transparency, and really the answer you gave really makes sense. It wasn't just I want to become an expert in XYZ just because you had practical reasons. You wanted to set yourself apart. You had goals of, you know, higher employment and moving your career forward. So that makes a lot of sense. Thank you for that intro. Tim McConaughey, let's kick it over to you.
Yep. Tim McConaughey. I've obviously been on a few of these shows now. I've got my CCIE in Route Switch, or I guess they converted it to Enterprise Infrastructure now. But yeah, I mean, when I got it, it was in 2018, and it was Route Switch. My main reason for going for the IE at the time, I mean, I was at Cisco. I was in advanced services. I was actually a contractor at the time. I was not actually working. I was working at Cisco, but I wasn't a blue badge. I didn't work for Cisco at that time. And I started working on my CCIE as, you know, a way to differentiate, not so much differentiate myself. That's, you're not going to differentiate yourself at Cisco with a CCIE, but more like maybe to show a lot more effort than, you know, the average contractors. And the thing is that I had been in the industry for, you know, a long time before that. But I'd never felt any kind of downward pressure to work on an IE. I'd had my CCNP for years, you know, and I was an enterprise engineer. And, you know, before that I worked I was a contractor for the Navy. So there was never any real pressure to like, hey, go get your CCIE. But at Cisco, the pressure is, there's a decent amount of pressure at Cisco to go to that level, especially if you want to advance, you know, at Cisco. So that's why I started doing it. You know, I kind of fell in love with the whole thing. I, you know, found a community of other people that were studying for theirs, and I wouldn't have made it honestly without them. If I studied for myself for a while, and I found that like, no, this sucks. Like just studying on my own, it's awful. So I was really happy to find Router Gods at the time. You know, so Chris, for example, is in there, and you know, a bunch of people were in there, and we all studied together, and you know, as a cohort, we managed to get our way through it. So that was kind of my reasoning at the time. I actually became a Cisco employee without getting my CCIE. So in the middle there, you know, I became a CCIE after I joined Cisco. And, you know, they actually pay a bonus when you get your CCIE. So I got a hefty chunk of change for doing that, which was not my primary motivation, but it was certainly nice, right?
Yeah, that's a nice perk. You timed that right.
Yeah. So that's me.
And what do you do now, Tim?
Oh, sorry. I work at Aviatrix as a customer solutions architect. So I'm in the cloud now. I still use routing, not so much with the switching, but it's pretty much all BGP in the cloud. So I definitely don't get the CCI level of technology anymore, but much more into the network design stuff, which is where I want to be anyway.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim. And Chris Miles, let's kick it over to you.
Yeah, it's almost I almost don't even want to say too much because my story is so similar to Tim, it might come off as a little boring. But so I'm currently a solutions architect also at Aviatrix, which Tim only works there because I told him to come work with us. So I'll take credit for that a little bit. But
it's legit.
But Tim's phenomenal. I brought him over because I really wanted him to come over. But nonetheless, senior solutions architect at Aviatrix. I'm working specifically in the cloud networking space as well. And I currently hold a CCIE. It was Route Switch at the time, converted to enterprise infrastructure. And I got that in 2019. 2019. So about 4 years ago now. And my motivation for it was, I don't know. It was like, I remember when I got into networking, I was always kind of the younger guy in the group. Like at every company I was with, I was kind of on the younger side. Don't get me wrong, there were some curmudgeons around, but there was also older people that were very encouraging and very helpful, which I love to see. And the thing that kind of bothered me, it was like, you know, I worked my way up. I got my CCNA, I got my CCNP. Was working on some big projects, like learning new technologies like MPLS and things like that. But I felt like I wasn't getting a seat at the table when decisions were made and things were designed. And that really bothered me. I remember if I would make a suggestion how to improve something, how to reconfigure things to be more optimized or implement a new technology, I'd offer it up and management would be like, okay, well, you know, we'll run this by so-and-so and if they think it's cool, then we'll do it. And I just remember it was definitely a very young mentality at the time, but I was like, why can't you trust me? Why can't I be the person that you run things through? So I kind of wanted to not so much differentiate myself, but maybe more so just prove myself, prove that I was capable of handling the challenge, prove that, you know, I could be the expert at the time that to trust with these decisions. And it's funny because as I went through the exam, I actually learned that I did not want to be labeled an expert because I think going through the CCIE process, you learn 10 times more of what you don't know than what you actually do know, right? That's kind of my trajectory and how I got there.
Well, thank you all for the introductions. I think we've got a good background to move forward here. So what I want to kind of start with is the thought around planning, how you decided to study. And Tim, I'll start with you because you talked about the prep and studying just on your own versus studying in a group. How important was it to have a plan ready for how you were going to tackle just the studying process from the beginning?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when I first started, and I think a lot of people run into this, when I first started, I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. The very first thing I was like, okay, well, where the hell do I start? Right. And at the time, this being, 17. It took me 9 months. So yeah, 17. You Google CCIE training and stuff like that. I found several good ones. I landed on INE at the time. As I was like, oh, cool. But, I actually couldn't afford it because I was a contractor. Right. So I was looking at it and everything and I started like, okay, cool. So I used a lot of the free stuff and I started looking around. I lucked out that I was actually in a WebEx Teams group. It was a WebEx Teams group for INE at the time. And the WebEx Teams group, wasn't like moderated really. It was like, anyway, long story short, it wasn't really like, I didn't get all the value out of it. So, Catherine, McNamara actually found me in that WebEx group. She would come there once in a while and actually recruit people that she thought were serious to go to Router Gods. That was the study group. That's how she got you too.
I think she poached me on Twitter.
She would just like go in there, find people that were serious and bring them over. And it was like the best. So short answer, when I started, I didn't really have a good plan. I mean, I Googled like how to study for the CCIE. I looked at INE. I couldn't really, at the time I couldn't afford it. I ended up getting it later when I started working with Cisco. And then, I also was looking at like the blueprint for the CCIE written. So at that time, the CCIE written was required before you could even attempt the lab, right? So you would have to pass like a normal Cisco written exam, like a bunch of questions and stuff, right? No labs on this one, just a bunch of questions. And then if you pass it, you know, then you get the ability to take the lab. So that's how I started. I started just by looking at the lab blueprint and just finding what I could find, looking at docs and stuff. Later on, I got access to INE, but the main thing was that really pushed me, that got me to help create a plan for me, was finding a community of other people who were already on the path and were willing to share that with me.
Oh, that's an interesting take. I, you know, up to this point in the different certifications that I've studied for, it's very much been sole focused, really just on me. And it's interesting that I've heard that a lot now with CCIE study groups, as well as the Cisco Certified Design Professional, that people really get a lot of energy and a lot of motivation. You know, it's similar to the going to the gym theory. You know, it can get difficult to go on your own if you're the only one pushing yourself there. But once you, all of a sudden you have 2, 3, 4 other people that you being there impacts them as well, that there can be a lot of motivation there. So yeah, that's an interesting concept. So Erica, I'll ask you, how did you prepare for the CCIE, and did you take any different approach when you decided to pivot from route switch to data center?
Yeah, that's a good question. So what I did for my routing and switching initially was, so I talked to several people, Pat Finger, Patricia Finger. She was she has a low CCIE number, like in the 2000s, I think. But she would say, okay, well, you got to go through and look at, you know, the actual CCIE written exam. So I was, you know, when I first started out, I was still trying to figure out, you know, which platform to, you know, should I do the, you know, the route switch or the SNA or something, you know? So I said, okay, let me try to, you know, mimic what she was doing, which was the routing and switching. So, once I started looking at the blueprint, I kind of did something completely opposite. There used to be a group called, groupstudy.com, and you get in there and some of it was good. You know, you kind of had to weed out. It's kind of like Reddit and Twitter a little bit, but it was like before they, you know, cropped up with their own stuff. But I would get into group study. Some people were studying, and some people were, you know, actually serious about it. A lot of people weren't. For me, that was kind of frustrating for me, because it was like, if you say you're going to do something, let's go ahead and, you know, block out the time. Hey, I'll take BGP. You take OSPF. Let's talk about it. Let's lab it up. I ran into these problems, you know, trying to go through these internet networking expert labs, you know, what happened, and nobody would, you know, communicate. So I went back to Pat and I was like, hey, I'm struggling over here. What do you do? And she was like, well, you know, if you want to get it, you got to probably, you know, go it alone. And so I went about it, the first 3 attempts alone, and that didn't work out for me because I failed it. And each time it was just like, I was getting close, but not close enough to say, yeah, it's success. What happened for me on the data center side, I pivoted. I was just like, okay, let me get a plan in place. One of the very first things that I did differently from the routing and switching to the data center side was I set aside time for, one, to study. Like I was studying a lot, but I wasn't like I felt like it was just all over the place. I was doing OSPF 1 month, and next minute I take a break or two and jump on BGP, take a break or two. But this time when I did the data center track, I wrote out exactly what I was going to be doing, what I was going to be studying, the days I was studying. I got my husband on board. So whatever I couldn't take care of at home, you know, he had to cover for me, and that helped out a lot. You know, and then also if I was, you know, taking a break, I wasn't like, I would do like Monday through Thursday, study. Friday, I'm not doing anything. Saturday and Sunday is along my normal long days. I would also have what I would call a variable off day between that time. So if I took a Tuesday off or Monday off for Monday Night Football. I'm a football fan. Hey, no problem. But I didn't like, you know, make a big deal about it. See, when I was doing the routing and switching, I was trying to just, you know, go 100 miles an hour into a brick wall, and I was getting burned out. And so when I went to go attempt exams, and in all honestly, I was like, well, I think I'm ready, but I don't know if I am ready. Yeah, I'm going through the INE workbooks, and I got that okay. But it's the other stuff, you know. It's like when Cisco throws you those, you know, crazy undocumented questions. It's like, what in the world? Where did this come from? So that I wasn't prepared for that. When I did my data center track, I outlined every single thing. I went back to the blueprint. I was able to successfully pass the written exam, but I also use INE's written exam material to prep for that. And then I took that. Then I went through their lab exams. And then I also bought Narbrick's. I can't pronounce his last name, but Narbrick, whatever. So I went through his platform, his training for the data center track. And I thought, oh, wow, this is great. So, yeah, it worked out for me. But the community, if I study with someone, I have to make sure that whoever I'm studying with, everybody's on the same page. And sometimes you get people that may put you in a different path because the way they study may not properly align with what you're doing. So you have to make sure that what you're doing and where you get the, you know, that group environment is going to be, you know, good for you. That's all I can say. I'm not going to downplay it or not, you know, support it. But sometimes it may not be the best move for you at the individual. So.
Yeah, that's got to be difficult to find somebody who's going to, you know, have the similar motivations, have the similar drive to go through that. And that's really interesting to hear about the schedule that you put together. Now, I think it can sound like it's a lot and that you're very restrictive on your time. But on the other hand, I think that makes a lot of sense because then it's less of a question of when you need to do things and what you're supposed to do because you've taken the time to prep that. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And I've heard that with other people as well, that they had set times of when they were going to do things. And not only that, but what they plan to accomplish, I think is really helpful. And I do also like that you built in those days of rest as well. It wasn't just a, hey, I'm going to get the CCIE by this date no matter what, and I'm going to work every day for X amount of hours a day to get there. You actually built in rest days and those rotational rest days. I think that's really smart. Chris, you had mentioned it, the place you were working at the time that kind of drove you, gave you the motivation to go after the CCIE, that people would always say, we got to run this idea past somebody else. And maybe those people were CCIEs, I'm not sure. But when you decided to go after the CCIE, did you have anybody or any group of people at the place you were working at the time that you could kind of lean on for assistance? Or how did you tackle going after preparing for your CCIE?
Yeah, unfortunately, not really. I eventually, I don't think it was till about halfway through my study, the company I was working for actually got acquired. And the individuals that I interacted with from there did have a few CCIEs on board. So I made good friends with Gabe, who's been on the podcast before. He was a big motivator for me. And mentor, which was great. But initially, no, not really. So it was kind of tough and just like back to what Erica said, it's like, you know, sometimes working with other people in a study group works for you. Sometimes you just have to, you know, bunker down, build your own study plan and run it through. Right. And I think that's a very important point is that you have to find what works for you. You can't take the advice from someone who's done it, you know, and, you know, just say that's the path, you know, you gotta, you know, trial by fire a bit, to figure out what works for you. And I learned actually that I was actually pretty, like, I liked the social aspect of it, of a study group for just for the accountability. Because I am very bad at procrastination. And if I'm left to my own vices to study on my own, there's a good chance I'm not going to do it. I don't want to be like one of these TikTok people that self-diagnoses myself with ADHD, but I think that might be a component of it. But unless I know that, and that was a great thing about Router Gods is we had these study groups where like every night you would log into one of these rooms and you would, I think it was actually a Google Meet back then, and you would just share your screen and while you were labbing.
It was.
Yeah. And there would be like four of us and we're just labbing, sharing our screens. No one's really talking. No one's like, you know, oh, you misconfigured something. No one's watching you intricately, but it was all about just accountability. You knew others were there doing the same thing as you. You don't have to be chit chatting or anything the whole time, but that did wonders for me. Yeah, I'm sure Tim and I had plenty of nights where we were labbing together on Google Meet, and I think I realized like halfway through that was a very important aspect for me to have the community to keep me accountable because it was hard for me to do that myself.
I think before we move on, I think Erica, you brought up I think both of you brought really good points. I wanted to say that you're right though, Erica. What you said about people that like sometimes. When you work with some people, like, you know, their plan's wrong or they're just not. I mean, that's true also. I would like to say that everyone in Router Gods was an awesome studier, but there were definitely people in there that, you know, were time wasters or would, you know, they just weren't ready. You know, they were one of those people that's studying for their CCIA, but had been doing it for like 3 years and like, you know, hadn't actually made any progress. You know, those people exist and there's nothing wrong with it, but part of being accountable to a group of people and getting involved with the study group, those are some of the pitfalls, if you will, is, you know, that you can end up getting attached to things that are just kind of essentially going to drag you down. You know, if you kind of let it, you have to make yourself accountable, like Chris and I were talking about, but you also have to be, you know, like, okay, well, this person, these people, they're good people. They're just not ready, or they're not ready where I'm at, or, you know, whatever. We're not going to work together, but that's just part of the whole study group mentality as well. Is knowing when you're going to be able to bring someone with you or somebody's going to come with you and when to kind of let it go.
Right.
Yeah. That's interesting. That's the first, occurrence of me hearing of a study group tactic like that. When I hear people talk about study groups, I think, okay, a bunch of folks are getting on a video call and we're talking about concepts the entire time or going through specific subjects. I didn't really think of it like that, of multiple people get on and they have maybe a common topic that they're labbing and everybody just does their own thing. And it's really the study group effect is just the accountability that you mentioned. I'd never really heard anything like that, but I can definitely see how that makes a lot of sense.
Well, there was one more thing that just to take it one more. So when we got towards the end, several of us, and we had a whole cohort of people. We had like eight, somewhere between like seven and eight, maybe nine, 10 people all going for their IE around the same time. We would actually pick. So the INE workbook, like you mentioned, Erica, they had multiple ones that were like mock labs that were full 8 hour labs that were basically like pretend CCIE labs. We would get on, I can remember several times, we would get on like a Saturday. We'd lab the whole day together. Wouldn't, like Chris said, we wouldn't sit there and talk with each other. We would be labbing. We would all pick the same lab to do. And then we would come back the next day and actually walk through it together. Like, hey, how did you solve this task? Well, I did it this way, and show each other like, yeah. Oh man, I hadn't thought of doing it that way. Like, it's incredibly helpful.
So I think one thing that would be really stressful for me, which I think is counterintuitive to a study group, but I think one thing that would be stressful for me would be the fear of not being able to keep up with my peers because everybody's, you know, wanting to get through this thing together. And that's a big part of it, is so you can lean on each other for many different aspects. Did you run into a lot of that, of people that, not for lack of trying, just had a hard time keeping up, and how did they keep up, or how did they keep going along the path?
Well, I think it's to the point Erica made earlier about, you know, getting her husband on board. I feel like that is a very important thing. Like, you have to, because you like, it's tough to say that people aren't ready or they're not smart enough or anything like that, because we don't know their environments. We don't know, you know, what their personal life is like that. So it's like, it's, you have to go one rung back and be like, okay, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to, you know, intake all this knowledge and be able to perform at this level. But the people that are important also have to be on board, because that means I'm not going to be around for a lot of that. Right. So it's hard to gauge. Right. But yeah, there's a whole book about this. Like, I think there's a book on Amazon. It's like how to tell your family you're going for your CCIE or something like that. And that's like half the thing is just breaking the news, right? There it is. There it is. Yeah, he's got it. Yeah.
Yep. Tim's got it right there.
Yeah. It's once I let my husband know this is what I'm going to be doing. His thing was, as long as you don't have to bring any more equipment in here, we're good. Cause I have a whole rack of CCIE racks sitting out in the garage. It's like, but this was before, was it GNS3 and Eve came out? But,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's just, you had to get the experience somewhere. And, the rack tokens from INE, they can only, you want to save those because those are, you know, used for your mock labs and the 8-hour labs. I didn't want to have to fumble my way through.
Yep.
You know, I can do that on my own equipment, my own gear. I don't need to do a whole, you know, 1,000 rack tokens just to set that up. So, yeah, you just have to kind of use that sparingly.
Absolutely.
So I want to talk about the multiple facets of the CCIE. So now is a bit different from when the three of you went through it, in that the before, when you went through it, it was the CCIE written and then the lab. Now you have to get you have to pass one of the core certifications of one of the different tracks of the CCNP, and that suffices is what the written would, and then you can take your lab. So there was a written and then a lab. How different, Erica, we'll start with you. How different was it for you to prepare for the written exam versus preparing for the lab?
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second. Let's really have that conversation. Now, I work for the vendor, but let's have that conversation. So, and I'm going to be transparent because I'm part of the CCIE community, so I feel like I can say something, and we'll just let the chips fall where they fall. Making some darts on some evil messages on direct messages on Twitter. I don't care. The written exam. So I felt like the written exam was not applicable to the lab exam. They were like night and day. It was almost like comparing apples to cows. It was like, yeah, no, let's, what are we doing with this? And then wait a minute. The written exam is not prepared. It's the best way I can explain it is, you look at a marketing, someone that is from the business unit, and they throw a bunch of product questions out there. And next thing you know, you got this 100 question, you know, multiple choice, drag and drop, whatever, you know, exam. And I've always been very leery about that, because you can luck up on something and say, okay, well, I think the answer may fall in between this one and this one. Okay, process of elimination. Let's just pick one because I got to move on. Bam. That is not really, I mean, this is just my personal opinion. That's not really telling you or showing what you've learned. So when you go to the lab, and that's where you see a lot of people fall off. It's like, okay, do you have the chops to walk in there and get a multi-protocol environment, whether it's data center, route switch, it doesn't matter, up and running in a very short, condensed time? Because that's what they're really looking at. How do you manage your time? Can you think very quickly on your feet, assess the situation? Okay, the problem exists here. Let me tackle this way versus I'm out left field somewhere else. I think Cisco needs to do a little bit better job. And like I said, I work for the company, and I also am a part of the CCIE community, but I think they need to do a better job with their... And it's not just Cisco, it's all of them, all the vendors. They need to do a better job of having people that have successfully passed the exam be able to show their chops in a lab, you know, in a lab environment, or something better than just taking a multiple choice question exam. I think that would bode a little bit better, because then you would be forced to really retain the knowledge. You think of it. I was talking with my husband about this about a couple of months back. I said, I see so many people that get the CCIE and then they don't do anything with it. And then, you know, it's almost like taking a driving test. Okay, well, you took your driving test and passed it at 21. You're still driving at 42 or whatever, and you never bothered to renew it except for just going to the DMV and pay it. Well, that doesn't necessarily show that you know how to really drive effectively. You just passed it at 21. So you want to be able to show that you were able to still maintain that knowledge and grow. And I don't see that happening. They just kind of, yeah, let me take your money, and here's the test, and if you can pass it, great, you get to keep your cert. And I think that it just needs to be a little bit different approach. I'm not saying it needs to be a complete CCIE retake lab every 2 years, because I don't want to do that either. But give me something where I can kind of show what I've worked on and what I know as some type of practical, maybe a 4-hour exam or something like that. I don't know, but I just think the multiple choice stuff, they need to do away with either or come up with something different. So that's my opinion on it. I know I'm going to get a lot of hate on it. I'm okay with that. But, you know, that's just my opinion. So.
If you don't mind, I have a lot of thoughts about this as well, and I'm sure Chris does as well. I'll try to leave him something to say. But so when I was studying, I got the INE, and I was studying for my written. I got access to INE later, and then I was studying for my written, or I was watching. No, this is after I got my written, but I was watching the video series that Brian McGann was doing for the V5, right? And in there, he says, "Oh yeah, well, when you're studying for your lab, you should just get your written on the way to get in your lab. You should just study for your written on while you're getting your lab." And I was like, okay. So I tried it, and it was complete lie. It was the worst lie ever. Brian, if you ever see this, you're a goddamn liar. I'm just kidding. Man. I'm just kidding. Man. Another but love. No. See, I felt like the written was their chance to put all of the questions to test you on the shit they could not test you on in the lab. Like, that was the everything about everything that they knew they couldn't actually put into the lab to test you on went into the written. And it was so broad. And it was like everything. It was like every obscure corner case question, like Erica was talking about. So obscure. It was a nightmare, dude. I actually managed to pass it on my first try. I still don't know how that managed to happen because, I mean, I had a big old notebook full of notes. I think it was the very last time I actually wrote notes was for the written because I broke my freaking wrist. Anyway, so yeah, no, that's a complete lie. Now it doesn't matter anymore, except for, you know, because I can't speak to the DE, which I think DE is the only one that still has a written portion. Can't speak to that one. But yeah, man, it was as a complete lie. You had to prepare completely differently for the written.
So you did treat it as two completely different things and prepped for them separately.
Oh, it is. Yeah. It is a complete, like, it's like Erica said, it's a multiple choice exam. Yeah. And I'm 100% with her on the whole, let's stop with this multiple choice crap. The best test that Cisco has ever done was the freaking CCNP T-shoot. And I've never met a person that disagrees
that the T-shoot was the
best example of a Cisco test.
It
right?
was so fun.
I mean, that was awesome.
Fun.
Yeah, there were a few. It was an enjoyable exam.
I hear that time and time again from people. If you ask them what their favorite certification exam was, and that constantly is the answer. And that's also the answer that I would get when people would ask what, if you're trying to renew your CCMP at the time before there was continuing education credits for CCMP, CCNA, that was always the answer. It would always be the T-shoot exam. I renewed mine.
I remember one time I renewed mine. I walked in, took the T-shoot. I walked out 25 minutes later and I was done and I was renewed.
Oh, nice.
And it was a great exam though. Like it was that. So Linux does this with the Red Hat exams, right? Like they give you, like the exam is build a freaking Red Hat environment. Like that's, and I think all the vendors should adopt that kind of anyway, so not to take up too much time, but that's my feeling on the subject.
Totally agreed. I think it was funny. Just a quick story is at my old workplace, there was like three of us network engineers that all had CCMPs at the time. And we all got them around the same time. So our recert would come up at the same time and we would, we'd all go take T-shoot like within a few days of each other to recert, and whoever got the lowest score had to buy lunch for everyone, which was always a fun experience. never had to buy lunch, I'll say that. But I counter to your point, Tim, I did the same thing. I was like, I'm studying for the written. Once I get past that, then I'm studying for the lab. There were two separate plateaus I was working towards, right? But we actually have a good friend, Henry Pardo, who did exactly what you said. He's like, the written was just in the back of his mind. He wasn't even thinking about the written. He was just, I'm going in, I'm labbing every day. I'm like, he's reading the guide for the written, but like, he was like, yeah, like maybe, you know, a couple of weeks before I go take the lab, I'll just pop in, take the written. And that's exactly what he did. I don't know how he did it because I couldn't do it. Like, to your point, like, and Erica made this point as well, they're like, they're not testing on the same thing, at least back then, which was very, very strange. Like IS-IS was on the written, but not on the lab. Like what was the point of that? Like what internal politics went into making that happen? Like, like it was silly. I'm glad they've restructured it now to where it's just, you know, focusing on, you know, if you pass the core exam, then you have the eligibility to take the lab. Which I think is, that part is also kind of good and bad. Because I feel like the written was kind of set the bar, like you had to prove you were serious about it before you could go take the lab. But now it's kind of like open to anyone that reaches that, encore level or whatever it is. So I'm curious to see how that favors in the future, like how many more people are taking the lab, how many more people are failing the lab, which we like to call the $1,600 lunch, which I'm sure it's upgraded now. It's probably a $2,000 lunch or something by now with inflation and all that. But
I think it's like $1,800 lunch. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, that I would like to know a little bit more about the decisions that went into that of changing it from a separate written exam to take the lab to you get to the core level of any one of the disciplines at the CCMP level, and you can now qualify for the lab. I'm not sure. I mean, my initial thought is potentially lowering the bar to entry to try to get more people to go after the IE. That's just my thought. I don't know if that's really what went into it, but yeah, I think it'd be interesting to have that conversation. You just mentioned the $1,600 or $1,800 lunch. So let's talk about finances a little bit, and because we know that it's a large time investment, but it is also a large dollar investment. And I'm not sure on the percentages, but I'm sure there's a fair amount of people that go into this on their own dime. And they're just trying to better themselves. And then I also know that there are people that have their employers sponsor them. So I'd like to get your take on that. Do you have any advice for people that want to go after the CCIE, but it may not seem financially feasible? Are there tips and tricks out there for approaching your employer to see if this is something that they would be willing to help put you through?
Live close to a testing location. That's the best advice. I can't tell you how many times I got on a plane, yeah, stayed in a hotel room, and it was all just to eat Jason's Deli and then go home, basically. So, and it was $1,800, but, no, I mean, I was someone that did it all on my own dime. I think my employer may have paid for one attempt. My first time I failed the lab, I don't remember if they actually did or not, but that was mostly on my own dime. Yeah, it's really tough. As far as advice, I don't know exactly what advice I can give, on the monetary piece, because it's also difficult because there was, like, we've mentioned INE, which was a great training resource back then. But, I think everyone in here would probably agree that there's not really one training that was kind of like the one ring to rule them all. You kind of had to get multiple sources to train with, because it was, nothing was exactly like the lab. And as much as it sucks to say it, getting in front of it and taking the lab and failing it was almost like an experience in itself that you needed to have to understand what you were up against. You got to see the beast, face. But I will say, I'm very glad that on the panel today we have all CCIEs who have both passed and failed the exam. Because all you first time passers out there, gosh, man, you're like, you earned it. I get it, but fuck.
What I was going to say was just that, the approach I take is, okay, so for me, I did mine through self, you know, paying everything. Matter of fact, I took out a small little loan so I could get the equipment, that I needed, probably wasn't the smartest idea, but I mean, if it was what I needed, I thought I could get it done in a short amount of time. That didn't work out as I planned, but ultimate goal is I did get it. But if you're going to actually try to, the best thing is to actually get your employer to pay for it. But the other hand of that is they may ask you to stay for X amount of months, like what is it, 18 months, 24 months. If you do approach that, approach your employer with that, I would probably make it where it's like a win-win. So they, they get a chance to have a CCIE on staff, and then, put it as a something that's going to be advantageous for both you and the organization and the company. Not where it's just like, well, hey, I can get my numbers, and then I'm out. Bye. Because nobody's going to pay for that. But if you can, show value and show that it's going to be beneficial within the organization, that's better than, trying to just, go at it and paying for it by yourself. The one thing I will say is that with the CCIE written exam or even any of these exams, I don't even know why they're still, you said $1,800? I mean, like, what are we paying for?
$1,800,
for something that's virtualized now. It's not like you...
Still.
It's still a lot, but it's not as much as, those GIAC. I think they're like, those exams are pretty, like, ridiculous. So, but, it's... The one thing I will say is I'm seeing a lot of people where they don't want to put the time commitment into it. And that's the big thing. If you're not willing to put the time commitment in there, I wouldn't even think about paying for it or approaching your employer. It's going to be beneficial for you, regardless of if you go into cloud, cybersecurity, because you're going to have to know the foundation. And the networking piece is definitely a must for any organization. So.
Yeah, so, I mean, on the financial aspect, I'll be honest, I cheated. I worked for Cisco, and it didn't cost me a dime. I got three attempts. I only used two. So I was done. Like, I didn't have to pay anything. That was one of the reasons. So one thing, though, actually, this is not entirely the question you asked, but it's a good point to make. At the time that I was a contractor, I had getting a CCIE on my list of things that I need to be done, as we've discussed. But something I had to think about was, okay, am I gonna finance this myself? And around that time, a rec opened up for Blue Badge, and Blue Badges, meaning employees of Cisco, actually get the three free lab attempts. So I had to do some hard thinking because the rec actually paid lower than I wanted to make. So long story short, I did the financial calculation and decided that, getting in the door at Cisco, becoming an actual Cisco employee, getting my three lab attempts, and then getting the bonus if I made it, offset that for me at that time, right? So was that ultimately, like, down the road a better idea? Well, once you the first time you negotiate the salary at a place that you're at is probably the last time you're going to really be able to negotiate a salary at the place that you're at. What I mean? So, I was kind of hamstrung from there. It was worth it at the time for me. And I still to this day say it was probably still worth it. But again, that was a piece of financial calculation I had to do. Like, is it going to be worth it? The other thing is, and Erica touched us on this a little bit, which is, before you go to the bank and take out a loan or whatever and approach your employer, you gotta line up all your other ducks in a row. Like, getting the money for it should be like the very last thing that you're doing, right? You should be in it to win it long before you're going to the bank to sign for a check or whatever that, whatever that is, right? Before you talk to your employer, you gotta know, hey, is my significant other going to pick up the slack? Like at the time I my wife, God bless her, I had two young kids and I pretty much disappeared for 9 months. Like, I was doing 30 hours a week studies at one point, like near the end, right? So I was every day on the weekend gone. I was waking up at 3 a.m. going to the office. She really pulled double duty. If she had not been able to do that, it would have been a moot point, right? I would have gotten halfway up the mountain and I had to come back down because I ran out of supplies. Like, I would not have made it. So before you start taking loans out, you gotta, like Erica said, you gotta be ready. You gotta be in it to win it. So that's another thing to think about.
Yeah, that is a really good point to have the entire plan set up. It goes to you know, similar thought for anything that you do while working for an employer. If you're asking for something, you better have everything figured out of what exactly you're asking for first, and any evidence you need to back up the reason why you're doing it. And as far as an employer financially helping you, I think that type and size of organization means a lot too. So a big employer out there is value-added resellers, and many of those value-added resellers, to maintain certain levels of partner agreements with these vendors like Cisco, is they need to have X amount of certified individuals on staff. So that employer is going to be almost requiring many employees to get CCNA, CCMPs, and CCIEs, and they're going to be much more apt to financially invest in you to go through that.
Yeah. And kind of a point that both Eric and Tim made is I think, aside from money, I think the biggest thing that your employer can give you, which is probably an easier thing to negotiate, is time. If you can get your employer to commit to letting you have labbing and study time every single day, that it doesn't cut into your personal life, I feel like you maintain a mental health level that you would not have otherwise. Just because you're working 8 hours a day, and then the second you turn off that computer, you know, you either walk in the other room or you drive home, and then you're on a different computer, like labbing, you know what I mean? It's like, it's grueling, man. It's a sludge. So if you can get them to, you know, you like Erica said, you got to promise some ROI on that, right? You're going to be like, hey, if you give me the time to do this now, it's going to pay itself back, right? I'm going to do this, do that. Yeah, just wanted to make that point that I think if you can get your employer to give you the time out of the workday to focus on it, that pays its weight in gold.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So another piece of advice question, is there any tips that you have for somebody right before they're getting on a plane or leaving to go to the lab, and they're, you know, within days of taking that lab? Any last minute advice for those folks?
I would probably say, one, shut off all, you know, you almost have to go into a tunnel, shut off all the noise factor. Definitely let your significant other know, and the people that are in your proverbial village, let them know, hey, I'm going to go take my exam. But I remember when I took my exam, my employer was calling me like every other day, which is not some nonsensical stuff. So I took mine in Research Triangle Park in North Carolina. When I took my exam, I told my husband, I said, listen, and I went down there the week before, and I was labbing all the way up until that Saturday night. I told my husband by Tuesday, I was like, I'm shutting my phone off. If you need anything, call the hotel number, and that's that. But it better be critical. Otherwise, you know, I'm not answering the phone. You have to, one thing I will say is have fun with it. I would definitely make sure that you're prepared, but I mean, you got to make, it's a judgment call. I think if you study up to the day of the day before the exam, but I would definitely, get some rest, because I went to bed at 11 o'clock and I could not sleep the night before. I was just up. I mean, I just felt like I had been drinking coffee all day, and it just hit at like 11:05, and I was just up until 6, and I couldn't sleep. And then when I found out I passed it that night after the exam, you talking about somebody that was asleep, I missed my flight the next day.
Oh, wow.
I was knocked out. I was out. I mean, the little lady at the, you know, like, hey, can I come in the room? I was like, oh my God, what time is it? I had missed my flight. So just, you know, it's a judgment call. You just need to, you know, make sure that you're prepared, but I would not go in there stressed. You know, just lab if you need to. If not, you know, it's a judgment call, but definitely block out the noise. You know, get the people that are in your corner, let them know that you're taking it. But otherwise than that, everybody else, all that work stuff, all that extra stuff, I would block out the negativity and the noise. So that would be my advice to whoever's going to take it.
Oh, that is solid advice. And I will just say, I don't know how anybody could sleep the night before or something like that. Chris, did you have a similar experience? hard time, a little bit of insomnia the night before?
Kind of. It's like the inverse of Christmas Eve. You can't sleep because you're excited. This one, you can't sleep because you're dreading the next day. but yeah, I mean, to Erica's point, I think it's very important. You know, at the end, you have to lock in. You have to, you know, set your eyes on the target. But I think you also need to, like she said, make sure you come up for air, man. Because if you walk in burnt out and just absolutely drained, you're not going to help yourself at all. You know, remember to breathe while you're in there. It's a very tense environment. Everyone's stressed out. No one's having a great time. So I understand that, you know, you're with kind of like-minded individuals, but I think you need to spend those last few days really working on your strategy. Because like for me, admittedly, I took the lab a lot. I took it a lot of times, a lot of times more than I should have. And you know, the format of the exam is out there. You know how things are laid out. And if you've, you know, already taken the lab once or something, and you've seen, you know, even you have even more of a perspective of how it's laid out. Strategy is very important. At the end of the day, you have to understand you're going in and you're, you know, knocking off questions that are adding to your total score of points, right? You're playing a game. It's a game. You have to get the most points to win the game. So having a strategy for, you know, going in, getting the most points, is important. I remember I even did a blog post on my strategy because me and my friends like fine tuned it very well. I even used like a mock lab that Tim created. And I showed every bit and piece of it, like what I was writing down on the paper, how I was, you know, putting checks on tasks and marking things complete and verifying and things like that. I think strategy is super, super important. And make sure you walk in there with one. Don't just, you know, go in completely blind. Make sure you have at least some plan of attack before you go in.
Yeah, that's really good. So I obviously lived at RTP, so I did not have to travel. I literally, yeah, I just rolled out of bed and I was already actually right there in the building. So the first time I took the lab, I did have some trouble sleeping. But the fact that I knew I could just get in the car and go, I made it a little easier for me. Like I, you know, kudos to the people that had to travel in, because that's already kind of a stressful event, right? And then hotel, that sucks, right? I was able to sleep in my own bed. So for what that's worth, that obviously helped me a little bit. A lot of people said the day before your exam, don't do anything. Like just relax, hang out. I'll be honest, I was not labbing up until the point at which I walked into the building or anything like that. I did have a checkbox of things that I wanted, that I felt like I didn't quite have yet, or wanted to brush up one more time on. Little labs, like INE has a whole workbook full of little labs. Like, here's one thing we're going to show you. Here's the lab, not like an 8-hour lab. I didn't do one of those before the day before, but I did some brush up stuff, right? Just for stuff but coming out for air, absolutely. I would not. I know some people are like, man, the day before the lab, I was doing these 8-hour labs. I'm like, dude, you're really not doing yourself any favor. You're going to walk in there. You're tired. You're burnt out. You're stressed. And that's starting the day, dude. You were there for eight right. hours. You know, like people don't yeah. understand. People are like, oh, I work all day at 8 hours. That's nothing. Like, no, you do not get it, right? Like, it is not the same thing, man. It is not sitting down at your workstation and answering emails. Like, this shit is, you are under an insane time crunch. And just like Chris alluded to, you're playing a game. And it's a game that they have set you up to lose. Like, straight up. Like, they will... I don't know how to explain it, but like the choices, the way the stuff's worded, the way the things are presented to you, they will steer you down all sorts of, you know, alleyways that are just made to eat up time. Like the whole point is, and they tell you, you can, if you Google it, there's plenty of people who will be like, you know, if we gave you like 24 hours, right. anybody could be a CCIE. That's what they say. They say, if you gave you 24 hours, anybody could be a CCIE. The challenge is to do it in 8 hours, right? To do all of that in 8 hours. And so the plan of attack that Chris is talking about is absolutely guaranteed. You have to have one. You cannot, you know, and you can't just like, oh, I'm going to go in and I'm just going to start with task number one. And by the end, I'm going to be done. That is not, they said it. If you do, it's one of those things that they've set you up to fail. If you just try to do that, right? It's not going to work. So you have to know enough about the technology to know how to skip around and where you need to be looking for the how they want you to do the stuff and in what order you should be doing it, not the order they presented it to you, stuff like that, right? So I totally agree that I think the tech itself is maybe 60% of the exam. There's so much more to the exam than that. There's like another 25 or 20% or whatever you want to call it in strategy. The time management piece, like is just those three things
and reading are probably
the most important things that you need. But anyway, reading comprehension. Oh my God. Yes. Right. And not just comprehension, like, oh, I know what these words mean, but literally being able to interpret the technology indicated by the words that they're telling you, like what the requirement is, right? Because they're not going to come out and tell you, we need you to use
they're going to imply it by using one word that implies,
you know,
it.
Right? They're going to say some obscure crap. Very true. But anyway, to get back to it, the day before, I definitely would not do like an 8-hour exam, a lab. I would try to relax to some degree. Sleep is always going to be a problem. Sleep is just going to be a problem. You need to make your peace with that and find a way around it. My friend took a melatonin the night before, and he said that sucked. That was a huge mistake. He was so groggy the next morning. He said he had real hard time firing on all cylinders getting started. So, you know, I don't know the answer, right? I don't, but you have to think, you have to know yourself well enough to know that.
Luckily, they do give you coffee at the testing center. So, yeah.
Much as you want to drink.
They give you coffee. One thing that I was going to say was just, Tim, you alluded to that as far as the, like you have, I think it's an 8-hour exam, but you really don't have 8 hours. You have, you know, one section for, was it troubleshooting, one section for something else. And then you have like a real small finite window to answer.
Yeah.
And then you have a finite window to actually get the rest of the config together. And it's like, oh my goodness. So it's that. And then if you, like you said, the reading comprehension. So if you read something and you have a question, the proctor is not there to help you. Determine what the because I've had a proctor tell me, well, you need to go back and reread that question.
I already know which proctor it was too.
I'm asking you a question. So, thank you for your help.
Yeah, it was all.
He wasn't that was bad. He was a good guy.
Okay. Well,
no, you're 100% right. The proctor is not there to help you pass your test. The proctor is there to make sure that you have an environment by which you can pass the test. The proctor is not there to help you answer questions about how to do the stuff and how to do the exam. No, the proctor is there in case your stuff breaks and they need to fix it.
So to start to really round this out, I want to go around the room one more time. And this may or may not be controversial, and feel free to say no comment, but I want to ask if there was one thing, one change, one modification, one enhancement that you would make to the CCIE program, lab, test, anything within those realms, what would it be? And Chris, we'll start with you this time.
I didn't want to go first. I don't know. It's like... The lab, I think the way the lab is built, at least I can only speak to version 5 of the routing and switching lab because that's the last one I took. I haven't taken the new one. It could be a complete breath of fresh air and be valuable, but some of it's just unrealistic. I think we've all worked in environments where, you know, it's just a complete shit show where, you know, like, oh, well, they decided to use RIP and they're using, you know, 6 forms of redistribution into OSPF over in this site because of this problem that happened. But those should be treated as corner cases. And I feel like the lab was kind of filled with too many of these corner cases at a time. And it was just like, I felt like I was in the exam so often just being like, why would anyone do this? Like it just felt like that you weren't using the right tools to solve the problem. I guess that does come with the trade, right? You need to be creative and be able to solve, very difficult technical problems with the technology that you're presented. So it, I guess in turn, it could be representative of the actual environment that you get put in. But I don't know. I do like Erica's, suggestion that we kind of maybe change the way we do the recertification piece. Like once you've already gotten through it, I think revisiting it, maybe in some kind of like cool panel thing would be nice, but I know that's unrealistic because we have a lot of CCIEs that that are looking to research and panel takes up people's time. But yeah, I don't know. I'd like to see that get a little bit more creative. I think the continuing education thing is pretty cool because I feel like that gives you an opportunity to not just focus on the technologies that you learned when you were taking CCIE, because we all transition. You're right. Like Tim and I work specifically in cloud. Is it valuable for us to learn, you know, DHCP snooping and, you know, layer two QoS? Probably not. So yeah, right. So I do like that they gave the option to, you know, if you want to learn Python or something, those are CE credits. Those can count towards, you know, recertifying your IE. So, yeah, I didn't really answer the question, but that's kind of what happens when you go first, I guess.
You can get me for that later. Erica, what are your thoughts on this topic?
Well, like I said earlier, I'm not a big proponent of the, you know, the multiple choice exams. But one thing I will say is I think that they need to revamp that whole 3 year in between. So like if you take it, I think there was a, when I took it, you had 2 years and then you had like a 1 year grace period.
Oh yeah.
And then they did the whole thing where you said, okay, well you got 3 years and that's it. What I think is every year or every 2 years, you need to show something. You know, I know that they've got the continuing education credits, but you know, they need to show something of like, what are you doing to contribute to the IT community? Whether it's through blog posts, through these are the projects I'm working on. And here's my GitHub, you know, that you can, you know, talk about either from a customer perspective or, you know, kind of redact that, but just kind of, you know, show something that I think is that could go a long way as well as, you know, increasing the, or improving upon the actual, exam itself. Like, let me show you what I've been able to do versus, well, okay, I got the numbers back in for me 2014 and then that's it. I think if we could show that, I think if it strengthens the IT, at least the CCIE community, because what I'm seeing a lot of the CCIEs, the lower their numbers are, they kind of become like almost like obsolete a little bit. And it's like they don't do anything to kind of give back a little bit. And some of them do, a good portion of them do, but, you know, it's just, what I'd like to see is if they do a little bit more to help out the people that are coming up, because I think that could, you know, strengthen the actual IT community a lot better. Get rid of the multiple choice crap. You know, let me show what I can do. You know, get me in front of the computer. Get me in front of the keyboard. Let me show you what I can do. But the whole debacle of written exam, multiple choice exam, yeah, I can do without that. And then the other thing is stop changing the exams all over the place. Meaning that if you're going to go with version 6 for the data center, I would like to see it become stable for a little bit versus trying to, okay, well, this month we're going to change it. That month we're going to add this. And it's like whatever is not on the attached to the data center track, meaning like I don't need to look at all this Wi-Fi stuff in the lab. I don't care about that. If I'm going for a data center, let me focus on data center, not all this obscure, you know, let me see if I can get these phones up and running. No hate towards the collaboration team. But, you know, just something like that. Just let me focus on the technology at hand. So that's another thing that, that I think is, you know, for me, for what I mean, we've all taken those exams where they throw a whole bunch of shit on there and it's like, oh man, where'd you come up with all this Wi-Fi stuff? I thought I was taking a data center track. So yeah, if they could do that, that would be awesome for me.
Those are definitely both from you, Eric and Chris. Those are really, I think, creative approaches to a recertification, like the whole community aspect of how are you furthering yourself and others using that as a metric for recertification, as well as I like the idea of a panel concept. Yeah, I agree that it may be difficult to scale, but I think it would be kind of cool as treating it almost like, you know, an interview, a job interview, to be able to recertify a certification. I think that's interesting. All right, Tim, take us home. What's your parting thought on the future of CCIE? What would you do differently?
Let's see. I think Well, I like what Chris said about the fact that I'll be honest, I called the CCIE lab the stupid router tricks exam because because it's not, there's no realism to it whatsoever, right? It is literally a reading comprehension. And do you know all of the technologies well enough to extract that? And can you do it to build this ridiculous bullshit, basically, and that will prove that you know all of it. What I would have liked to have seen, and what I hope is on there, and I have not taken the new one, and if I'm being candid, I probably will never take another CCIE. I'm good with mine, but the enterprise infrastructure supposedly combines, route switch. It also combines SDA, SD-WAN. I hope, against hope, that it does so in a way that is closer to the actual intended use cases of those technologies, right? That's what I think would make a good exam, would be, hey, enterprise XYZ is building an SDA fabric and they're using SD-WAN to connect the sites together. And, and we need to do, this, and here we need to bring in this other branch and we have to do this tech. I feel like you can test all of those technologies in a way that is still relevant and gives the person walking out of the exam a feeling I can do this,
right?
In the real world, I can go do this, right? Instead of having to think I know 1,000 different stupid router tricks, but not really the context of why or when I would use them necessarily, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing is, I hadn't even thought about this at all, but I really like what Erica said about the idea of CEs as community improvement or something. I don't know. I'm reminded, as she was talking about it, I'm reminded of the classes, the coursework I did for WGU. And what I mean is that, a lot of that coursework was what they call a practical thing, basically, where they give you something and you're supposed to do something and then write a document or something about what you did in a way that, could be consumed by others, right? So I actually kind of like that idea. I don't know. And what I was also thinking was okay, well, who proctors it? Who assigns? Who says this is valuable? Who says this is worth CEs? That's probably the harder part of it, but 100% on the idea. I think it's too good of an idea to just throw up your hands and be like, we can't do it. I think there's a lot of value in incentivizing people with a deep knowledge of something to share it with other people, right? The whole community. I mean, until we're all replaced with ChatGPT or something, it'll be useful. So I like both of those ideas. And the only thing I would add to it is the piece I was saying, where I think if it was more like I said, the Linux Red Hat exams example, as an example, you go in and they want you to just build a Red Hat environment. And it's not a goofy Red Hat environment. They're not wanting you to do stupid things that nobody would ever do with Red Hat, right? They're asking you to actually build a Red Hat environment. And it might be that now, I can't say because I haven't taken it, but my hope is that they've integrated the technologies, in a way that it makes sense now.
Yeah, excellent advice all around. This has really been a very interesting peeling back the onion type of episode around the CCIE. I know I've learned a lot about all of your experiences going through the preparation and the test taking, and I hope our listeners have as well. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you very much to my panelists for joining us on the show. You can find us at artofnetworkengineering.com, on all the socials at artofnetenge. Not that I wouldn't do this anyway, but since I got a couple of the Cables to Clouds guys staring at me, I got to talk about their show as well. Find them www.cablestoclouds.com. at Cables to Clouds on Twitter and all the other cool places, and check out their episodes drop every other Wednesday. Thank you all for joining us. This has been another episode of The Art of Network Engineering. Hey there, friends. We hope you enjoyed listening to that episode just as much as we did recording it. If you want to hear more, make sure you subscribe to the show in your favorite podcatcher. You can also give that little bell rascal a little ringy-dingy so you know when we release new episodes. If you're social like we are, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Art of Net Eng. That's Art of NETENG. You can also find us on that weaving web that is the internet at artofnetworkengineering.com.
There you'll find our show notes and some blog articles from the hosts, guests, and other friends who just like getting their thoughts down on that virtual paper. Until next time, friends, thanks for listening.